is Capital Correspondent filling in for Carmen Russell's Luchansky. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org. Tuesday, tens of thousands turned out at protests across the country in the first May Day since the Occupy movement touched off. Today, we check in with members of the movement that has energized progressive efforts throughout the country. Joining us in the studio are two members of Occupy DC, Jason McGahee and Justin Rodriguez, and on the phone is Rouge Al-Wazir. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you, Pete.
Thank you, Pete.
Great to have you. I want to get into how you all got involved with Occupy DC and what it's been up to since its forceful eviction in February. But I actually wanted to begin with where we just left off in the last conversation on this issue of gentrification, and specifically with the potential mass displacement taking place in Alexandria. I wanted to get your thoughts. Rouge Al-Wazir, are you with us on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah, great to have you. I wanted to begin with you. What are your thoughts about, I don't know if you had a chance to hear some of the conversation, that we were looking at potential mass displacement in Alexandria. JBG, a regional developer, is looking to build a lot of luxury condos and apartments, and there's a housing that is, in fact, affordable that is slated to be torn down.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing now is D.C. in particular is not facing really much of a foreclosure crisis, but a huge displacement problem. And that's where Occupy Our Homes comes into play. When the banks and the state fail to provide housing to all, Occupy Our Homes comes in and we use direct action to move families and start resisting displacement as a whole. And now we're seeing a lot of school closures. We're seeing 30 school closures and we're seeing six Walmarts opening. So we really see where the state is interested in more about profit, not housing.
What is Occupy Our Homes for folks who have heard about the Occupy Wall Street, maybe heard Occupy DC, but talk about Occupy Our Homes.
Occupy Our Homes basically directs people's rage at economic injustice into fighting strategic alternatives to resist displacement. And the most important element of Occupy Our Homes is the fact that the people directly affected are taking leadership and liberating their own communities. And an inspiring example of this is Bertina Jones. She was one of the first people that we were able to do some direct action. And now she's organizing in her own community, and they're trying to liberate their own little neighborhood.
And we're going to come back to Bertina Jones, but I wanted to go around and ask each of you how you came to get involved with the Occupy movement. Jason McGahee, I met you actually at Occupy Wall Street. It was in September, so not long after Occupy Wall Street began, September 17th. Talk about your story and how you came to get involved.
I'm from rural Illinois, and I spent about 4.5 years working at a nonprofit supporting adults with developmental disabilities, teaching life skills and helping them with their daily needs. And every year, the budget would always get cut for their programs. And I just kind of, in general, what was going on with the U.S. Foreign and domestic policy, and then tied in with how it was directly affecting the people that I was working with closely, and having to tell them in so many nice ways that their government doesn't really care about them. And I heard about what was going on in Wall Street, and I decided the best thing that I could do would be to quit my job, move out of my apartment, and come out and join the movement.
That's Jason McGahee, who's from Illinois and came down to Occupy Wall Street. Justin Rodriguez, how did you get involved? You were at Occupy DC right from the get-go. I know it's September 17th, Occupy Wall Street happened, and a lot of people were inspired by that and then came down on McPherson Square, and you were there from day one.
Yes. Actually, I've been involved in activism for about 4 years now, and over time I got in touch with some people who helped organize Bloombergville. And some of those people decided to organize Occupy Wall Street. I was going to go up there, but by the time I was about to go up there, I heard that Occupy DC was getting ready to begin. So I went down there on October 1st and been there ever since.
Talk about those early days. It grew to be an encampment and having a serious distribution of food and committees and a whole bunch of things. But in those early days, a few park police would come through and kind of shoo people away because the numbers weren't there to be able to hold the camp. It was a very different place.
Yes, actually, it was pretty rough when we first got there. The first people who had organized it would come up there, and they helped set everything up. And some other people, including myself, would come down there and tried to camp out in the park, but we couldn't, so we had to sleep on the sidewalk for a while. But eventually, more people started coming, and we were able to build up there. I started out on the food committee. helping to bring in food and things like that. We actually used Twitter as an ordering service, which worked pretty well for the first month and a half, and helped us to get the food that we needed. And also, eventually, we started using it to order more things like tents, generators, and other things like that, a lot of which came through Twitter, but also through relationships we helped build with people.
Now, you'd been active for 4 years, but a lot of folks at Occupy DC, this is the first time, maybe they were politically aware of some things, but this is the first time engaging in activism. Now, I was surprised, having been a reporter for a couple of years in and around DC, recognizing, with the exception of yourself, just about nobody of those first folks that turned out.
Yes, that's true. A lot of people, this was their first time getting involved in activism, but the environment is made very friendly. Even though I still consider myself to be a novice, there were more experienced organizers who've been organizing for at least a decade who had come to the park as well and helped to mentor people. And that really helped to make a great space to produce more activists, which is why Occupy DC was able to survive as long as it did, as far as being able to have effective actions and still being politically relevant.
Rouge Al-Wazir, how did you come to get involved with Occupy DC?
Actually, I was in Egypt when their revolution first broke out. And so I experienced all of that. And I ended up coming back to the States and was just really active trying to organize around the Arab Spring here in D.C. And then when I heard about Occupy D.C., I was actually ready to go to Occupy Wall Street. My bags were packed. And then I heard about Occupy D.C. and just decided this was kind of something I was waiting on my life for. I had lost my aunt from leukemia because of the healthcare that we have in the state, and that's what kind of first drew me into really understanding how the system works. And I started to really read a lot more about the U.S. Hypocrisy in the Middle East, the war, what was really going on in Iraq and in Palestine. And so Occupy DC was something I kind of always wanted to happen.
And then what happened? It was in existence until from October 1, and then it grew and grew and grew. February, it was forcefully displaced. I think all you were there. Talk about that for a second, Jason McGahey.
It was quite an experience. We got word that they were probably coming that night, since we had lost the right to get notice before they came in, and so we'd set up some barricades around the center. And the cops came in the riot gear and the barricades and the police on horseback early in the morning, and then had people in the hazmat suits, and it was quite a scene, quite a circus, and like kind of the negotiations and lies, and then the brutality later on.
Now, you've been around a number of scenes, and this was all since you've joined Occupy Wall Street. I think when I'd met you on Occupy Wall Street, you'd been arrested once at that time. When you arrived first, not once. You've never been arrested. And now, what is it, 5 times?
Yeah. Never been arrested before, never actually seen police brutality in person. And so then I got to New York, and then a couple of days I was arrested and saw quite a few beatings and seen a whole lot more since then. But.
And you have a couple of lawsuits?
Yeah. I'm in a lawsuit. I was part of the 700 that got arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge. And so I'm definitely in a lawsuit with them. And hopefully to be on a couple lawsuits and stuff with a couple other cases for wrongful arrests.
That's the voice of Jason McGahey. Now, Occupy has not received received an unbelievable amount of media attention. Not right at first. Occupy Wall Street seemed to be ignored in those first days, maybe week. And then through independent media, social media, it built a force that had to be reckoned with. But since it's been displaced here in D.C., there hasn't been nearly as much media attention, but that doesn't mean the work has stopped. Rouge Al-Wazir, lay out some of those things. You mentioned a bit about Occupy Our Homes, some of the things that folks who were involved with Occupy DC are now up to.
Well, first off, let me say, in the earlier stages of Occupy, it was really learning about who we were as a movement and what we wanted together. And then we were introducing each other and supporting one another with, you know, radical political analysis and learning to challenge the deeper systemic issues that were related to economic inequality and the extreme wealth gap. And from that, we started to learn about what we all wanted, and the eviction happened. And after the eviction, we were forced into going to different communities, forming different working groups, and starting to expand our organizing, expand our direct action, expand our direct democracy. And that's where Occupy Our Homes, for instance, comes into play, and Criminal Injustice Working Group, the DC Learning Collective. And so you see all these different working groups because of the eviction. So in a way, I'm kind of happy the eviction happened. I do think the visibility is an important aspect, but I think right now we're shifting from just the encampment, since it was a tactic, to actually organizing with communities and learning how we can build people power.
And one of the first, I guess, example of foreclosure protection that you mentioned earlier is the case of Bertina Jones, a grandmother and resident of Prince George's County, Maryland, who was unemployed for several months in 2008 and 2010. Bank of America foreclosed on her home and then sold it to Freddie Mac later that year. In a letter to Senators Barbara Mikulski and Ben Cardin, as well as Representative Steny Hoyer, Legal Aid Bureau of Maryland wrote, "This foreclosure was unnecessary and was caused by Bank of America's loss of documents and inattention to the process. When Bertina Jones and others attempted to bring to Freddie Mac's attention the questionable foreclosure process, they found the government-backed mortgage lender difficult to reach. But that changed less than an hour after an energetic protest outside Freddie Mac's downtown D.C. offices in February. Occupy Our Homes, a group affiliated with Occupy D.C., staged a demonstration which led to an impromptu press conference outside Freddie Mac's offices where Bertina Jones fielded questions from reporters."
All right. So just, they could start throwing out questions. You can answer whatever you want.
Okay.
Bertina, how did it go in there?
Well, they accepted the letter, and they wouldn't have a meeting with me, but they did let me and Reverend Hagler, and then they accepted the letter.
Can you describe what the letter said?
The letter said that all the complaints that I have and how they illegally took my home, or trying to take my home.
What is your situation right now?
I'm still in the home.
And who else lives there with you?
My son and my grandson.
Where did things go from here? Were you satisfied with the response that you got?
No, I wasn't. But they said that they will be contacting, someone will be contacting, their attorneys will be contacting me.
Why did you feel it was important and, you know, a good choice for you to get involved with this group and kind of have the backing of the Occupy folks here with you?
Because it's a movement that we need to get involved with. They're not, Freddie Mac was not listening to me. They're listening to me now. As they say, can you hear me now? Because I wrote them, I did court documents, I did everything that I possibly could to resolve this issue. And they refuse. I'm just, they don't have to deal with me. Their lawyers won't even return your calls.
How long has it been going on for?
It's been going on for since September of 2010.
How does it feel to be an icon, like the face of the travesties that so many people around the country are facing?
I don't feel like an icon. I just feel like I am so glad I've stood up and fought, and I hope that more homeowners will come and join us, and together we can do this. It is the people. It's the people. It's not greedy corporate America that took our tax dollar and then don't want to help the homeowners. I am not an icon by no means. I'm just a homeowner trying to save her home. What's my next step? We will be organizing more. Should we tell them about tomorrow?
Yeah, tell them about tomorrow.
Tomorrow we'll be at Freddie Mac in McLean's, Virginia, in Tyson's Corner.
Tyson's Corner. Handing off this petition and another one from a guy in Riverside.
I am not stopping. You know, at least if you take my home, everybody will know the truth on how you stole it. You stole my home. No, you haven't stolen it because God gave it to me. You're trying to steal it. And that's the difference. Any more questions?
How do you think this will affect your family in terms of maybe seeing you going out here, speaking up for yourself?
Well, really, you know what? This is, I was just like the rest of the homeowners, embarrassed, ashamed. You know what I'm saying? This is not a good feeling. I've worked 14 years. I'm a single parent. Nobody gave me anything. I worked for everything I've got. And for them to try to steal $100,000 equity, is that right? And just give me two? I was ashamed. You know, I felt bad I was losing my home. I cried a lot. But then after some time, you got to stand up and fight.
How Occupy helped you in this whole process?
Occupy, they meet with me, they strategize, we get people together. They're just an organization that you need to be involved with. And we're going to do anything in this country because we can see what's going on politically, excuse me, on how they're trying to turn the whole country around, the haves against the have-nots. We got to stand up as a group and take our rights back.
This event that you were a part of today, is this the first time that you've been a part of something like this?
Yeah, and it feels good. Feels real good. That at least like I said before, I was ashamed and cried and was humiliated. It's a hurting thing to think that you're losing everything. But now it feels good to stand up and at least that I'm fighting for it.
What do you tell your son? You said you have a son?
Yes. For a while, I didn't even tell them. But when it started going public, I had to tell them. I did this alone as a single mother, just cried. I didn't want them to feel as though we was getting put out of our home. Isn't that something? That is wild.
Do you have a message for other homeowners who are going through a similar situation?
I do. You need to come down and fight with us. This is not just my battle, it's all of our battles. You need to come down. These banks say they're going to modify and help you, and they lying. They're deceiving you. They let time get in between, and then they snatch your home and say, oh, well, you didn't follow the rules when we did everything you asked us to do. Other homeowners need to come down and stand up and be counted, especially in the PG. They have been hard hit. They are taking the blacks' wealth. Do I think it's racial? No. But most of the people in PG are black, and they're just taking our wealth. That's all that I have is a house. I'm not Romney, have a daddy with money. I work for everything I have.
That's Bertina Jones, a grandmother and homeowner in Prince George's County. We'll come back and get reactions from members of Occupy DC who worked with her to protect her home. We're taking a news break back in a minute. This is Capital Correspondent. I'm Pete Tucker, filling in for Carmen Russell Sluchansky, who's on vacation. Just before the break, we heard from Bertina Jones, a grandmother and homeowner in Prince George's County, whose home was slated to be seized, while previously Bertina Jones had found Freddie Mac difficult to reach just an hour after the protest outside Freddie Mac's offices. The company spokesman, Brad German, told the Washington Post Freddie Mac was looking for a positive resolution to Bertina Jones's situation. We're joined in studio by members of Occupy DC, Jason McGahey and Justin Rodriguez, and on the phone by Rouj Al-Wazir, who's also active with Occupy DC and with Occupy Our Homes. Rouj, I wanted you to comment on, it was interesting listening to Bertina Jones and the evolution of her thinking from being ashamed of her situation, which so many Americans are in, having more on their debt and not sure if they can stay in their home, and crying, to standing up and fighting back.
That's very true. I mean, we see a lot of that with all the tenants and the homeowners that we've been organizing with. People are ashamed. They feel like it was their own fault. It was their own wrongdoing. And it took people like Bertina to really stand up and learn that it wasn't her fault, that she shouldn't be ashamed, and that. You know, together we can connect her own struggle to this larger movement. And that's what it's been about, really, about supporting other homeowners and tenants to realize this, I guess.
And Dawn Butler, can you talk about her situation?
Yes. Dawn Butler was a different kind of case. She was a tenant who had been living in her house since 2006 and suddenly started getting eviction notices. The homeowner of the house had gotten evicted, and that's who they were trying to evict. So she had the right to purchase her house, but the bank completely would ignore her, wouldn't give her the chance. And so what we're facing here is the right to refusal and the right to tenant purchase.
Justin Rodriguez, we talk about housing issues. I know you've worked a bit with youth homelessness. Paint a picture for where we're at in this country. I mean, we have a lot of people without homes and a lot of people who – and a lot of homes that are empty. So it's ironic.
Yes, it is. The housing situation is really a serious crisis, and it's been really understated mostly by government agencies, also by certain nonprofits. And I want to talk about the severity of the problem. In places like Atlanta, Richmond, and D.C., homelessness is very high. I know in D.C. alone, one out of 108 people are homeless, the highest rate in the entire country. Also, there's approximately anywhere from 11,000 to 12,000 homeless people in D.C. total. I believe 2,400 of which, I think that's the number, 2,400 rich are actually youth, which means they're under the age of 24. Youth homelessness is a really big problem because a lot of families are becoming homeless now, especially in D.C. with rent prices going up. When I was working with homeless youth with the Latin American Youth Center, we would go out and find homeless youth on the streets. Many times the reasons they would tell us that they were homeless on the street was because the parents couldn't afford rent and a lot of them had to be evicted, or some felt that they were a burden on their families and had to leave. Those are usually the ones who are like 15 or 16. So it is a serious issue here of not just about foreclosures, but also about people not being able to afford rent as well.
What's the impact on youth of becoming homeless?
The impact on homeless youth is very detrimental. It can be issues that can last them for years. Being homeless youth, even when you're with your family, is problematic. Many times families are separated because they're on a lot of family shelters. So many times mothers can take their children to the shelter, but fathers can't take their children to the shelter. Many times this splits up families. Also, there's a high amount of single mothers who are homeless as well, many of whom are teenagers, which is a problem as well. And also just the treatment of homeless youth is very problematic. A lot of homeless youth are sexually exploited. A lot of them are put into pretty much what amounts to slave labor, day labor work, other things like that. Also, there's issues within certain organizations and that help youth, that discriminate against them and abuse youth as well. Also, there's a problem with the D.C. Family Protective Services, which has been very neglectful to his youth and whose director is constantly changed every year because of scandals that result from their negligence.
That's the voice of Justin Rodriguez, member of Occupy D.C. Jason McGahey, as we talk about some of the things that Occupy D.C. members are up to, although the press coverage isn't what it was when folks were on K Street at McPherson Square, talk about some of your work. It seems like I saw you get arrested for at the SOA, School of the Americas Watch, which is, we'll talk about a bit about that and some of the other issues you're working on.
I had gone to a training with the School of the Americas Watch and to kind of get more involved with what they're doing. They've been fighting against the School of the Americas, which is in Fort Benning, close to Atlanta, Georgia. The United States is training Latin American soldiers to go off and be part of the death squads throughout Latin America, using the training to go after labor organizers and activists, campesinos, and for decades have been trying to get it closed and stop the that form of U.S. imperialism, which leads to economic imperialism as well. And so I got arrested with them about a week or so ago as they were doing a demonstration around the Capitol building. And kind of more recently, we were working to organize some many different protests in kind of an Earth Week leading up to Earth Day, going after BP on the anniversary of the BP oil spill. We went up to Cargill, calling out their influences in controlling the food market. And we went after the tar sands and the Canadian embassy. Right now there's a man who's on a hunger strike who says he's going to go all the way with it, calling for an end of carbon usage to calling for an end of the destruction of the environment. And then also we were working on going after the IMF World Bank. Well, they're the IMF and World Bank as they were in town and had some good ruckus outside their building to try to draw attention to the international economic crimes that our government is widely in control of. And then the other day, kind of in solidarity with Appalachia, some of us went inside the UBS on K Street, which is the third biggest financier of mountaintop coal removal, and did a mic check and a coal dump inside their building in solidarity with groups across the country that were going after UBS. Because it says in their mandate that they will not invest in any business that is destructive to the environment, and mountaintop coal removal is very destructive to the environment and to the communities around there. And so we stood up in solidarity with them going up against the destruction of their communities.
Justin Rodriguez and Rouge Al-Wazir, if you want to add anything to some of the stuff that Occupy DC has been up to, feel free. I also want to turn to the impact that Occupy DC has had, particularly on youth. But if there's anything you want to, that we're leaving out from criminal injustice or other issues, feel free. I think we basically covered it. So let's turn to the impact. One of the things that I've been struck at is I was out in Prince George's County. Some students on March 1st walked out of their school, and among them is Shane James. He's a senior at Northwestern High School in Hyattsville. He and his fellow students attempted to stage a walkout on March 1st, which was billed as a National Day of Action to Defend Public Education. A flyer entitled "The Students Are Angry" listed some of the students' concerns which led to their walkout. They included unsanitary conditions as well as unsanitary food, large class sizes, commonly with 40-plus students, poor teacher pay and treatment, especially regarding the deportation of Filipino teachers, underfunded programs such as band and English as a second language, and an overall environment where students have pretty much no say in education policies. However, when the students attempted to walk out, they were met with force as police and administrators blocked students from leaving the building. Initially, Shane and several others were given long suspensions and were even accused of inciting violence. Since then, however, the suspensions have been removed, likely as a result of the activism surrounding their cases. In conversations I've had with Shane and his classmates, they've told me that they were inspired by Occupy. I recently had a chance to speak with Shane James on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Here's part of that conversation. Two quick questions for you, Shane. Why did you walk out in the first place, and what's the status of your suspension?
Well, the suspensions were revoked. Over the past month or so, we've been working with students and administration to coordinate other events like a day of silence for Trayvon Martin and all that. And I guess that, coupled with community pressure and so forth, we managed to work it out where the suspensions would be revoked and we could continue actions. As for the walkout, a lot of students had gotten together, and there was a national call by Occupy Education for Student Day of Action on March 1st. And so a lot of students at my school wanted to do something about it, and we kind of just agreed to a walkout. We thought it was a very powerful, symbolic action. And so we talked about it. Researched issues with the education system. We took what we already knew that was wrong, and we know because we go through it every day. And some of the things we addressed specifically, and we would have been able to address should we have been able to walk out. We wanted better food. We wanted better teacher pay because the wages for our teachers in our county has been frozen for 3 years straight, and across the country they've been threatened. They're poorly paid as it is. We wanted substantial student representation on the Board of Education in our county and, frankly, throughout the country, because students don't have enough of a voice in the political process that determines, you know, what affects us directly. We don't have a vote on the Board of Education. We don't have anyone speaking out for us, and it's pretty unfair. We definitely wanted smaller classroom sizes because, you know, not just in this county but across the country, this class is where there's 50 students in them, and it's just ridiculous. Teachers can't teach in an environment. We can't be comfortable and learn in that type of environment. We wanted an end to the No Child Left Behind Act and the meaningless standardized testing that it imposes upon us. Issues like that.
That's Shane James, a senior at Northwestern High School in nearby Prince George's County. Inspired at least in part by Occupy, he and his classmates attempted a March 1st walkout, only to be met with force as administrators and police blocked them from leaving. Also on March 1st, and also unmistakably inspired by Occupy, college students marched on student lender Sallie Mae and then the Department of Education. We turned to a clip of the protest outside the Education Department where activists use Occupy Wall Street's signature mic check. We begin with Isaiah Tony, a student at George Washington University who's $66,000 in debt.
Today is March 1st.
Today is March 1st.
If we're going to mic check,
if we're going to mic check,
We're going to have to mic check.
We're going to have to mic check.
Today is March 1st.
Today is March 1st.
All over the world.
All over the world.
Students are doing direct action.
Students are doing direct action.
In solidarity.
In solidarity.
With students.
With students.
And other people in education.
And other people in education.
Those of us here in the D.C. area.
Those of us here in the D.C. area.
Know that we have a special responsibility.
Know that we have a special responsibility.
As being residents of the nation's capital.
As being residents of the nation's capital.
To speak out.
To speak out.
When we know that injustice is upon us.
When we know that injustice is upon us.
My name's Isaiah.
My name's Isaiah.
I'm a student at George Washington University.
I'm a student at George Washington University.
And I have $66,000 in student debt.
And I have $66,000 in student debt.
And I'm not even done.
And I'm not even done.
I have a loan with Sally Mae.
I have a loan with Sally Mae.
And Sally Mae is a bad actor.
And Sally Mae is a bad actor.
They don't pay their fair share.
They don't pay their fair share.
But they expect us to pay more than our fair share.
But they expect us to pay more than our fair share.
It's predatory.
It's predatory.
Thank you. Education under attack. What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
That is from a March 1st protest outside the Department of Education. A higher up at the Department of Education came out and, through the mic check, responded to the activists there. In these closing minutes, I wanted to get your final thoughts on where the Occupy movement goes from here, but also on the impact it's had on youth. There were high school students walking out, college students. This has touched a nerve in this country, and particularly maybe among young people. Maybe we can begin with you, Jason McGahey.
For me personally, I think the effect on the youth is the hope. For me, I mean, I'm holding out as long as we can to ensure the younger generations continue fighting. I mean, that it's not going to be the Occupy's out here in a short period of time. We're going to have massive change in all the very many ways in which our society is having problems. So, I mean, the hope for me is the continued action in the future of the generations to come to build a much bigger and a much bigger movement.
Justin Rodriguez, what do you think when you hear the high school students, college students stepping up?
I think it's a really good thing. It shows that we can continue to have this activism going because, I mean, this whole process is not just something that's going to last a couple of years. It's something that's going to last maybe generations in order to create a better world. And we need to make sure that generations are trained so we don't have the gap that happened after the civil rights and the anti-war movement. The one involving Vietnam. So I think it's really important to do that. And I think another thing, too, is to point out that a lot of the people in Occupy movements are very young. I myself am only 25, and most of the people I know in Occupy are actually younger than me. So that goes to show that Occupy has started as a youth movement, and it does show that youth can organize amongst themselves. We are very competent. For so long, we've been seen as people who had to be taught what to do, people who weren't able to do anything for ourselves. And we have proven that to be wrong and proven that even though we have been systematically pushed to the side, now is our time to come out here and to make a difference, not just for youth, but for everybody and work with everybody as well, as equals.
Rouge Al-Wazir, and this is true of all three of you, having reported on Occupy DC, I'm just amazed at the amount of work and time you've all put in. But Rouge, where do you see things going from here?
I'm really moved by the energy surrounding Occupy, really. You're beginning to see a lot more people starting to organize away from the camp. Because the camp was just a tactic, and now people of all ages from the left, new and old, are coming together, sharing and learning and supporting one another and organizing in their own communities. Again, you see... like, for instance, Occupy Our Homes, we're going into different communities, learning how we can resist displacement together. And you're seeing the Criminal Injustice Working Group working with people that have been part of that system and learning how we can start incorporating education and learning to build a base of people power.
That's Rouge Al-Wazir. I want to thank all three of you for being here, Justin Rodriguez and Jason McGahey with Occupy DC. This is Capital Correspondent. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org. And join us next Tuesday right here on Voice of Russia Radio.